You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we look forward to seeing you there.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
Well, hello and welcome to the Mushroom Kingdom. I am just one of your hosts here in the 602 Club as we're coming at you live from, a very different galaxy. But so excited to be here tonight as we are going to be talking about the Super Mario Galaxy movie. And with me to do that is none other than Rye Paulson. Rye, you're looking very fiery tonight. Did you eat one of those flowers again?
Yeah, I kind of have a bad habit of doing that, so I'll have to lay off next time.
Better than the cloud
yeah.
that you ate earlier. So,
it's true.
Yeah, at least we're on the ground. Oh my gosh, well, we're going to dive in deep to this film at the second in the series, but before we do that, find us wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you're subscribed. You'll get the episodes as soon as they come out. Of course, you can also give us a star rating review on the different platforms like Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and you can share us out on social media or with just telling your friends. Word of mouth is a great way to grow podcasts, so do that. On social media, you can follow us at X, Twitter, at the 602 Club. We're on Instagram at the 602 Club TFM. You can also find us online at Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. And you can find the entire network, brand new website at tfm.fan. And of course, at Patreon at patreon.com/TrekFM. So you can support everything we're doing and make sure it keeps coming to you. So I wanted to ask you this, Rye, before we like even dive into anything else about the movie. How are you feeling coming into this one, you know, with it being the second film? Was the first one something that you had enjoyed and so you were looking forward to this, or was it more like, I guess here comes some podcast homework?
Yeah, I think, I like the first movie. I think it's good. I don't think it's like amazing or anything like that. But I enjoy it quite a bit. I went into it initially, 3 years ago, thinking I was not going to like it. And I was like pretty pleasantly surprised. I enjoyed the story. The fun Easter eggs were good.
Yeah.
And so I was looking forward to this movie. It didn't feel like I was like, oh, great. I got to try to get out to the theater for this. Like I was genuinely like looking forward to it. I like the idea of continuing and doing like a Mario universe. That's kind of inevitable with the money it makes, but I was ready to watch it. Maybe not like opening night, but like check it out during the weekend when I had time.
Right? Yeah. No, I mean, I think I'm right alongside you in that. I enjoy the first one. In fact, I think one of the things about the first one was just surprised how much I enjoyed it. It was way better than I thought it would be. Video game movies just have such a weird track record, and of course Super Mario doesn't have a great record on screen, so
yeah.
So therefore, coming into this one, it was like, okay, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be good, hopefully. The first one was surprisingly good, so maybe they found a way to continue that here in this new film. And I would say I think that kind of coming into it, one of the things that left me a little trepidatious about this one was just that the trailers didn't seem to have any clear narrative to them. They just seemed to be a bunch of scenes about things happening in the Mario Galaxy. Mm-hmm. And so that's the place I wanted to start with you, was just kind of the story for this movie. Mm-hmm. And so we, start with Princess Rosalina. She's apparently the adoptive mother of the Lumas. Mm-hmm. The living little, stars in this comet observatory. And it turns out that Bowser Jr. is pretty hell-bent on draining all of her power to create a universe-destroying cannon mm-hmm. to honor his father. And then insanity ensues. Mm-hmm. And so what did you, like, think about this as kind of the narrative thrust of the film? And, you know, does the movie become too broad, or do you feel like they're able to find, you know, a nice balance between, you know, story and just, like, mayhem?
Yeah, I think this is the first movie that I've done with you on the show where I didn't, like, not, like, generally over the moon about it. So this is new territory, which I'm enjoying, where you're right. There's so much going on. I think the story, there is a story there, but it just, to me, it felt like we're just jumping from, like, referenced and cameo, and like the story is the feel to me the story felt like a kind of a side thing. Like, we have to have a story here, but mm-hmm. man, are we gonna do, we're gonna kill it with all these people, like, excited to see this thing here, this thing here, this character. I felt like we were jumping from, like, reference to reference, where, like, I had a good time. I enjoyed, like, I grew up playing Mario and Mario Kart and Super Smash Bros. And I love Nintendo. And so, like, of course I'm watching it being like, this is fun, of course. But the story didn't do enough for me because it was like it was so broad. There was so much going on. It's like, look at the galaxy, look at everything that's going on. And so it didn't, the story wise did not land. For me personally, I'm curious what you thought. People are pretty mixed as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think there's kind of two sides of this. You know, one, I think it's interesting because the movie really becomes about kind of answering a question that was left dangling from the first film, which is Princess Peach doesn't know where she comes from, mm-hmm. right? And so in this movie really becomes about answering that
yeah.
question. Mm-hmm. And there's all these interesting family dynamics throughout these films, right? You have the Mario brothers. You've got Peach, who doesn't have a family, but she's been adopted by the Toads. Now you've added Princess Rosalina, and her, you know, she's this adopted mother of these living stars. You know, you've got Bowser Jr. and his dad. And so
yeah.
there's just all this stuff that's happening. And I think the key here is this, the actual story idea, I think, is good.
Mm-hmm.
I think the problem is that it does get muddied and lost throughout the film because we never really actually have enough time to truly focus on the characters because there's always so much movement. You know, yeah. It's kind of the way that I think of The Force Awakens, right? Mm. It's like J.J. Abrams took the acting advice from George Lucas of faster and more intense and just ramped it up to 11 to the point where it's like everybody's running and sweating all the time and there's no time to actually dive into a character's character mm-hmm. because we don't stop long enough to have any kind of really truly reflective moments.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of, like, small places where that can happen, but on a whole, I don't think that the story is allowed to breathe enough in that way to do that. And I think that you're pretty right to call out that one of the main issues in that is this is just more excited about throwing everything in the kitchen sink at you from the Mario universe that's existed, you know, since I was a kid, right, mm-hmm. when the original Mario Brothers came out yeah. on NES,
mm-hmm.
And every iteration since then, you know, that's really what they're trying to do here. And you do kind of lose a little bit of something when it actually just comes to the story.
Yeah, and I guess I don't understand why they're doing it this way. Like, I get they start, like, the first movie, it does this a little bit. We get, like, Rainbow Road. We get some references, some fun things, but the story felt way more cohesive. And they made a crap ton of money. And they don't, like, they're going to be able to make these movies for so long. I don't know why they felt the need to be like, okay, we got to make sure we're, you take this bait, this, you know, dangle the keys in front of you and like, oh man, like, oh, look at this thing. Look at Fox McCloud. Look at Mr. Game & Watch. Look at, you know, all these different very fun references to like from the games. And the list is a lot bigger than that. But there could have been a very slow rollout. Like you said, there's a good story here that they just don't take the time to like flesh out. You said it best when there's no room to breathe. There's no like getting into real, like I was excited for Rosalina. I felt like she was there for 5 minutes, like max. And so, yeah, I think that they just like, it's still fun, but they really messed up on like, people will still have fun. This movie will make a crap ton of money still, no matter if you add in 25 references or 5, you know, like let's slow it down and get a good story and still, you know, add some things here and there.
Yeah, because, you know, I thought that this was a very interesting movie in the sense that there are some places where they are saying some things that are worth paying attention to. The movie had this really interesting juxtaposition between two styles of parenting with, you know, Bowser and Rosalina. And even, you know, there's the way Peach was raised, you mm-hmm. know, by the Toads in the Mushroom Kingdom. And so, but this idea of kind of like villainous parenting, you know, I thought that this was an incredibly interesting movie when it decided to focus on anything about this idea of the way that Bowser Jr. has, you know, taken everything that his father has passed down to him. Mm-hmm. And then he's gone to the extreme version of that. And I thought that was a really interesting thing to be showing here in a movie like this, where so many kids and parents are going to see it because, you know, what you pass on to your child, they will take, and a lot of them will kind of ramp it up to the next level, you know, mm-hmm. And in some ways, like where people, I think we see this even online, right, too, where just people get radicalized, right, by these ideas. And, mm-hmm. you know, in many ways, that's kind of what's happened to Bowser Jr. because of his dad and what he's taught him. He's become a radical who desires to destroy the whole universe so that he and his father can rule, I guess, over its ashes.
Yeah.
They never really answer the question of what exactly they're after and why, goal. Because if you destroy the universe, then where are you going to live?
Yeah.
But I just, there is that aspect to this. Like, so there was something kind of interesting that I wish we had actually, it's like, if we had just taken that thematic element and played that out between, you know, these two different parenting styles, man, I think that would have been so fascinating. But really, it's just kind of a touch point for the film, and it never really focuses on it.
Yeah, there's like a small moment in the movie that's like actually pretty funny, where Bowser Jr. and Bowser are like talking. I don't remember the exact details, but like Bowser Jr. is like explaining his like plan, kind of, and Bowser's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. He's like, then we'll kill them all. He's like, whoa, we don't gotta kill them. And it's like, that's like the evidence of like, Bowser Jr. has seen what his dad has done previous movie, mm-hmm. and obviously Bowser has changed. He's like acting like he hasn't, but he's clearly changed since being shrunken and turned into like little itty bitty Bowser.
Yeah.
But his son has taken even his views and like way of living and ruling or trying to rule to like, let me destroy everyone. Bowser just wanted to marry Peach. Like he did bad things, but it was in the name of love per se. Because he just wanted to marry Peach, where Bowser Jr. just wants to kill everybody. And it's just like, that's a really interesting like thematic element that would be cool to, like you said, dive into. But they just kind of say it. And yeah, like his motivations aren't really fully fleshed out. I'm like, why do you want to kill everything? I don't really, because your dad was evil in some aspect. Like, I get it, but like, I don't know. I would have loved to know more of why Bowser Jr. is so,
he's just angry.
Yeah. I mean, Benny Safdie's doing a really good job. I guess we'll talk about that later, but I do like his voice work there.
Well, and I mean, you know, again, there is this juxtaposition between Rosalina and her star children, adopted star children, and Bowser Jr., right? Because even though they're quite childish, you know, they're still also willing to sacrifice themselves, if need be, you know, to rescue their mother. And I think, again, this is where this movie, with all of these things that we're talking about, could really have driven home this idea of, you know, you can teach your kids to be self-absorbed, self-obsessed monsters who basically, in the end, when they don't get their way, they want to destroy the universe. Mm-hmm. And or they could be the ones who, when push comes to shove, are willing to sacrifice themselves for others, you know.
Right.
And yeah, that's just it's like it's slightly there, but we don't really spend enough time to dig into it enough to bring it to the forefront. And it's disappointing because I think the movie could have been so much more interesting and powerful if it had thought about more of, hey, well, we've got this thing that we're doing subtly. It's doing it's a great thematic element. Mm-hmm. We could actually entertain kids and teach them something important at the same time. But really, we're kind of just more about trying to wow kids with craziness.
Yeah. Yeah. It's unfortunate because, I mean, it's proving to be correct. This movie's made almost $500 million already. Like, this movie, but I agree with you.
Something else that was kind of interesting in this, and I noticed that in the film, you know, you get Bowser Jr. and the whole goal that he and his father had was that they would steal the power of the most powerful princess, right? And use her powers to destroy something, you know, to corrupt everything that's good. And I was really fascinated by this because it's another theme that I just wish that they had focused on, because what you see here is that the idea that you can corrupt creation and all that's good, or you can, you know, build things that bring life, right? And there's another great juxtaposition there that they absolutely don't focus on. It's a thing that's kind of like there, but you have to be paying attention to actually see it. And I think that this is one of those places where it truly is a disservice to the movie to not dive into this more, because, you know, you have these two sisters who have this power that they can, you know, they basically have the power of creation. Mm-hmm. They can redeem things that are broken and ugly and all of that. And, you know, at the same time, you've got the Bowsers who want nothing more than to just, like, destroy everything that stands in their path. Yeah. And man, talk about something that really could have been interesting, and they just don't do anything with it.
Yeah, I mean, it is such a shame because you're getting all these like little tiny like thematic elements that are good, but like you said, you have to be paying attention to them. Most likely you have to be an adult that comprehends movies more than a child does. There are kids movies that, like, you know, someone might say like, oh, that's so on the nose. But like the point is it's on the nose so that a kid can learn from something and not just be filled with, you know, cocoa melon images for 90 minutes. And it bothers me because I'm like, yeah, I pick up on it as well. I'm like, that's really good. I wish they talked about it more, because then my, you know, 11-year-old brother who went and saw the movie, who loved the movie, of course, I don't think he noticed that theme that's going on there. That's because it's just they're giving us a sliver. It's like, okay, just give us a little bit more. Let's flesh this out. But I think what they do present is good. It's a important theme for, I think, anybody to know, especially kids, about how you can use, you know, how you, I mean, it's the Spider-Man thing. It's like you have power, you have a responsibility to use it for good, or you could use it for evil. And you get these two forces constantly at odds with each other, Bowser Jr. and Rosalina. And I just wish they did a little bit more, which is a common theme that we're talking about this entire time. But it's good. Like, I want to commend them and give them their props where it is. Like, I enjoyed that aspect of it, but it wasn't enough.
Well, and I you know, it's one of those places where, as a viewer, you're just kind of frustrated because you do see where this movie truly could have been something special in that sense, where I think it truly could have been something that you know, was going to be something that lasted in the zeitgeist, mm-hmm. beyond the whiz bang pop nature, you know, yeah. of it. And I think, you know, a part of that too comes down to, you know, that this movie has this really interesting thing where we have done this shrinking of Bowser. He's, you know, been living with you know, Mario and Luigi and Peach, you know, in this shrunken castle of his own, you know, and he's kind of slowly being rehabilitated, and there really is this sense that this movie is showing us that a person is they make their own choices, but we're also products of our environment as well. Those mm-hmm. two actually go together. It's not an either or, it's a both and, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And I think that's really interesting. And so and yet we have these characters who are constantly willing to kind of sacrifice themselves for those that are their enemies, right? Even when they don't know if there's any hope that enemy is really ever going to change, you know, because this movie kind of shows us, like, the moment Bowser really has the opportunity to think he has the upper hand and do what he had originally wanted to do, destroy the universe, well, he takes it, you know? And so, again, there's another spot here to really highlight the difference in these two worldviews and way of viewing life and people and all of that. And again, they just don't take the opportunity to really hit home something I think that is truly important for kids to be seeing. And it's too bad, you know, because I think it's just another good missed opportunity.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. There's so much, like, little crumbs there that, like, we see these characters that are good constantly, like, being like opposing the evil, you know, of the Bowsers, and redeeming and sacrificing and loving and, you know, doing all that they can to let good come about, the, you know, the Mushroom Kingdom, while the Bowsers just try to destroy it. But it's a kid's movie. It's like, it's for kids. It's for younger audiences. It's okay to, like, say it a little bit more. We get movie. I mean, like, Project Hail Mary, a movie that's rated PG-13, not PG, so it's for a little bit older, but there's no swearing. We talked about it, you know,
yeah.
the last time we spoke about
yeah.
a movie. But you, like, it overwhelmingly communicating its point, its messaging, mm-hmm. its themes, yeah. there's hope, there's friendship. It is just pouring off of the screen, and none yeah. of us are like, man, that's really heavy-handed. Like, there's a way to do this right. Like, there's a way to be like, there's good, yep. there's evil. It's yep. very clear. They've set this yes. world up yes. in this way, you know, and it's okay to be like, yeah, instead of the cameo from this character to set up our Smash Bros. Movie, let's just take 5 minutes to explain some things that are going on a little bit further, because there's, you know, 5-year-olds going to watch this movie. They need the explanation,
mm-hmm. right?
Which will lead to, you know, conversations and, you yeah. know, building up their character. Like, it's just, yeah, it, yeah. it blows my mind that this is what we're getting. But
Yeah, no, and the sad part about this again is that these things are already in the movie a little bit. All they need to do is actually bring them to the forefront, as you're mentioning, more. And I think that the thing about what we're saying is that we're not asking kids to be beat over the head stuff. What we're saying is that take the thematic elements that you've already woven into your movie that are subtly there and make them slightly more overt so that the movie itself has more meaning than being a trivial visual cotton candy mind dump.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's you know, you don't want, I think kids have enough in their lives of just being spoon-fed entertainment and something to help them pass the time. It's like, well, why don't we help them pass the time in a way that is beneficial? Like that they're going to learn something. And you know, that's what's interesting about that is that really is the Lucasian way of thinking. Like George mm-hmm. Lucas created Star Wars specifically in the 70s because he felt this desire to be able to pass on something to kids other than entertainment and cynicism mm-hmm. because that's what was at the height of the day in the 70s.
Yeah.
He's like, no, kids need to be able to – the same way myths and legends have spent the rest of – you know, have been utilized all throughout history to help teach kids good morals, meanings, and messages – well, we should continue to do that. And that's mm-hmm. why he created Star Wars. And it's like, this entertainment could be so much more. And it's disappointing when they don't even take the opportunity to accentuate what's already subtly in the film.
Yeah. And it's not like it's weird to me that it's just these movies that seem to, like, I don't remember. I don't watch a lot of, like, I mean, I've seen like the Minions and other Illumination stuff, but like Disney, Sony, like DreamWorks, like you could list off whether you like the movie or not, whether or not the message is even perfect, you know, with whatever you think about recent Disney or Pixar movies, they're not they do a good job. You could list off 100 movies over the last 25 years that are popular, the kids love, that have a message, that are good. There's a way to do it. Why, like, what is the goal? Like, why switch? Why deviate from the mold? It works. People have fun. These movies make money. Like, I don't get it. I simply don't understand.
And I think a great example of that right now, Hoppers is out. We've both seen Hoppers.
Yes.
And I think Hoppers' message is great.
Yeah.
And really well done. Mm-hmm. And very even-handed, too, mm-hmm. Where it could have not been. And so it's ridiculously entertaining.
It's
so,
a fun movie. It's good.
You know, that's the thing, is that you can do both. It doesn't have to be an either or. It can mm-hmm. be a both and. And that's the beauty of filmmaking, I think, in general. I think it's one of the reasons that, you know, both you and I love storytelling in film, is because movies have a way of moving us in so many different ways. And, mm-hmm. and they can teach us things that are incredibly salient and powerful and resonate with us in ways that can last in our lives forever, right? There mm-hmm. are movies that I could name that have done that for me that I will go back to just because they help reinforce something incredibly powerful in my life. And they've taught me something actually good, you know? So, and kids' movies can do that too, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, Harry Potter's written for kids, and yet it still has an incredible power for adults as well. So,
totally.
What do you think? We have three new friends, you know, major friends that kind of show up in the film with Yoshi and Fox McCloud, mm-hmm. and like you mentioned earlier, Princess Rosalina. And so, what did you think of all of those new characters? I mean, I had no idea that Donald Glover was playing Yoshi.
Yeah.
Like, that was a huge surprise when I saw that come by on the credit screen.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think they're fun. They're good castings. I think Donald Glover's not doing – I mean, he's just doing the Yoshi voice. Like, it's not that much work for him. So I'll just say he's fun. I think the character Yoshi's fun. I'll be happy to see him more. Brie Larson, I think, is also a pretty good casting for Rosalina. I thought she sounded great. I thought what she did was with, you know, what she was given was solid. And I think they like hit the nail on the head here for Fox McCloud. I think he's such a perfect casting.
Absolutely.
Like
Glenn Powell.
It just fits. It just works. And the highlight of the movie for me was the, you know, 15, 20 second Fox McCloud intro, different animation style. He intros his whole team and I'm like, gosh, this is awesome. I want a full movie of this. Agreed. Like give me all of this. And so like, cause they were one, they're doing something different. Like that was awesome. I was like, this is really cool. I think he isn't given, this is the movie, but he's not given a lot. But I think if he was given more in like his own movie, he would be really fun and continue to prove why he's like quite literally the perfect casting for Fox McCloud. I can't think of anybody better.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, of all of the new characters that we add, he's the best. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's so funny. He just inhabits that character perfectly. I mean, you know, you can imagine he's basically doing the version of him from Top Gun Maverick, but at 11, you know?
And
that's what's perfect about it, right? I really appreciated them bringing this out. I thought it was, it's genius casting.
I love really it. Good. Really. And like, did you see his like video that he did running through like the movie theater?
I didn't.
You'll have to look it up after. He like when they announced who he was before the movie came out, when they announced the casting or whatever, there's a video of him like dressed up as Fox. It's pretty fun. It's pretty funny.
I just wanted to ask you, it's an animated movie, right? And so animation and all of that kind of stuff really matters. And is the animation detailed enough for you? Does it feel like they've grown at all from the first film? You know, what do you feel about this kind of animation style?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I mentioned in the Fox McCloud scene, they do like a different animation. It's like kind of like Spider-Verse, like anime-esque. I think it's really fun, really clever. The whole movie, I think it's fine. I like it. It's not the most amazing, where it's not like out of this world, but I think it has its own distinct look. I think it is polished. I think it looks good. I don't think there's like major like, wow, this is like really ugly or anything like that. And I think it works for this movie and for this universe. And so it felt the same. I didn't rewatch the first movie, but it felt the same in terms of like its visual feel and like everything like that. So I have no complaints on my end from it. I think that it's, you know, I don't want to say like serviceable as in like it's like just like fine. Like I actually think it is pretty like good animated like stuff essentially, and I enjoy it. How do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good way to put it. Like it's good, it's serviceable, it's fine. I mean, I don't think that it has there's nothing that makes it stand out against anything, you know. I think there's nothing that makes it unique or really really interesting. I think it's fun and it's vibrant and it's colorful and all that. I think the one thing that just I wish that it had was more distinction, you know. And I think there's a danger when and with all of these kind of computer animated films like this where they can all start to have a sameness to them, because, you know, there was something beautiful about the way when you used to think of you know, old Disney animated films, and they were legitimately, you know, changing the style with each movie to kind of fit what they're doing. I mean, you know, Mulan and Hercules and those type of films are great examples of like where they're referencing what had been done in the past, you know, from those places they're using as inspiration. And, you know, there isn't necessarily anything inspiring, you know, mm-hmm. about it. Yeah. And so I think that's just something where, you know, you would want, and I think that's what you mentioned, the Spider-Verse, right? That's the thing that made those films so great, is because they were mimicking the art form that they were pulling from in comics, and then mm-hmm. bringing comics just literally to life on screen. And so, yeah, I kind of wish it had done more of that. But I mean, you know, again, I think it is fine. So,
yeah, totally.
What did you think of the final stinger? Another princess.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. It's kind of like the whole conversation we've been having, where like we are constantly, at least from this movie, I don't think from the first movie, but from this movie perspective, we're like, give us more of the substance, dive deeper into are these characters. But at the same time, I do take the bait sometimes. I do enjoy seeing these characters. The Daisy showing up, I think, is fun. I think we're going to keep, this is just going to be the pattern. We're going to continue to get more characters till we get like a Smash Bros. Movie, is my guess.
Yeah.
And I can't complain. Like, I'm not going to complain about it. I think they'll find a very famous actress to voice her. And she'll do a pretty good job, and, you know, somehow will be, I don't know what's coming next. I don't know what they're going to do per se, but like, I'm not mad about it. I'm more excited for Fox McCloud saying I'm going back to my universe. Like that excites me more than, Daisy, but it's fine.
Yeah, man. I think, it is what it is. You know, the interesting part about this is that the last Super Mario Brothers game that I really played was Super Mario World from Super Nintendo. Mm-hmm. And I never had a Game Boy. I didn't have any of these systems. And so I didn't really grow up with, the Mario world the way that so many people did,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially like myself, where it's like I grew up with it, but it was only at friends' houses, right? And so
totally.
The idea that we're going to bring in another character, I think, is fun and fine, and I think there's nothing wrong with that at all. So, I think, again, the only encouragement I would have for them is to just make sure that you're trying to be just more inventive maybe in your storytelling and in your movie in that sense. And I think that would be really helpful, especially just allowing these characters to be characters that are interesting. Because, I mean, part of bringing something like this to the screen should be about expanding the characters themselves to the kind of way you can't do in a video game, mm-hmm. and the type of video games that these are, right?
Yeah.
I mean, these are video games where you're getting to know characters and stuff. So I think that would just be an interesting aspect to bringing these to life in animation, mm-hmm. And in film. So, I'm pretty interested. Where are you going to land then on your ratings for the Super Mario Galaxy movie?
Yeah, it's... I mean, gosh, I've been toying back and forth because I wrote a review and put a rating. And I enjoy talking about this, but not for the reason of like actually my view of the movie went up. But I think I'll land at like a 2.5. I will say it's right down the middle. I had a good time. It's not like an actively bad movie or anything like that. I wish it was a lot better. So I'll just say it's right down the middle.
Yeah, I think, when I came out, I think I gave this a 3.5. But as we were talking about it, I was just kind of realizing, no, it's a 3, I think. Like, mm-hmm. it's above average, but it's like just above average. Like,
yeah.
If anything, this is probably 2.75, you know. Totally, it's totally. It's not really a true 3. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like you said too, it was fun to watch. Like, I didn't hate watching it. I enjoyed it. I just wish there could have been more to it.
Yeah, so. I did not regret my time. Like, I didn't, you know, hate watching it. It could have done better. That's all.
Yeah. Exactly. So, well, hey, man, if people wanted to catch up with you and, you know, see what you have going on outside of being here on the 602 Club, where can people find you?
Yeah, you can follow my Instagram at Rye Talks About, RYTALKS About. And then over on Letterboxd is where you're going to find more of what I'm doing, what I'm watching. And that's 182nd, ONDD82ND.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks for being back. Of course, everybody can find me here on the network outside of the 602 Club with all the great Star Trek talk with Chris Jones. So check all that out. Of course, you can also find me here. You can also find me on social media under the name MattRushing02. If I'm on that platform, that's my name. And then I'm over on the Nerd Party Network with a couple of shows. One's called Owl Post. Talk about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time. And then talking about Star Wars with my good friend John Mills on Aggressive Negotiations. But as always, thank you so much for joining us. And y'all come back now to hear. ¶¶